Campus FM presents 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri. Welcome to this anniversary series, remembering 100 years of women on campus. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I shall be looking at this theme from many different angles, the sociological, the statistical, the anthropological, and the historical. I shall be asking questions about life for female students and academics on and off campus, yesterday and today, and possibly also tomorrow. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today Dr. Fiona Sammut, who holds a BSc, MSc, PhD from Warwick, who is the head of the Department of Statistics and Operations Research in the Faculty of Science, where she lectures, of course. Professor Irene Shirihakwilina, who has obviously a BSc, MSc, PhD from Reading. She's a professor, obviously, in the Department of Mathematics, where she conducts research and teaches a lot, she told me. She has been appointed on various UM Senate and Council subcommittees, including that of gender issues. Ms. Danielle Martine Farrugia is also with us. She is a PhD student and science communicator in the Department of Physics, where she also lectures and also lectures in other places, which I'm sure she'll tell us about. Welcome to you all. You're all from the Faculty of Science, and today's theme is going to be Women in Science, a wide-angled view. I'm not going to go into detail regarding my guests' extensive CVs, because today I would like to leave as much time as possible, since we have three guests, to discuss the issues and the challenges for women in the world of science. I have read all the CVs and found them interestingly diverse and, frankly, as a non-scientist myself, slightly mind-blowing. I hope to hear their opinions on the subject under discussion today, including the different angles that might arise from their diverse fields of study. I also hope that they will reveal something of themselves during the course of the discussion. There are, of course, more women in the Faculty of Science, but the space and time restraints made it necessary for me, unfortunately, to limit the number of guests. So I'm going to start, as I usually do, with a sort of general question, which I'll give to one of you, and then you can sort of pass it on to the next person. About female participation in science subjects in general. I know we've gathered together between us some European statistics and also some Maltese ones. Irene, if I may, What about female participation in science subjects in general?
It improved a lot. There was a time when there was only one woman in the whole course doing science, but these days, I may say there's equality among genders, and sometimes there are more women, for example, taking mathematics than men. So the situation changed. If we look at what happens to them once they graduate, the situation, I looked up some statistics from 2005, when there were about 2,000 men more working with a degree. And the numbers since then, they were 14,000 and 16,000 then, and now they are 43,000 and 42,000. So the discrepancy remains sort of the same, but the numbers have become four times as much, you know. So the work balance measures introduced along the way have helped.
This is Malta we're talking about, or Europe in general?
No, it's I took these numbers from NSO.
Yes, just to make that clear to the listeners, that's all.
So, yes, because we had, way back in 1999, the introduction of unpaid career leave for up to 5 years. Then parental leave came, then reduced hours and teleworking, and now we even have the free child care scheme. So why this happened, we can understand, because Malta aspired to join the EU in the late 1990s, and eventual membership induced, and almost I may say forced, the Maltese government to introduce these measures, and they helped.
Yes, that definitely has helped. Looking at the numbers in Europe, I was looking at the 2016 ones, but I think that Danielle actually did one better than me and got the 2017 ones. Malta's not doing too badly. Perhaps I can return the sheet you gave me so we can talk about...
It's still at the lower end of the spectrum, so there are countries who are doing much better, I think. So, for example, at least in the Eurostat statistics, Lithuania is doing really well. So there are 5 EU member states where the majority of scientists and engineers were women, with 57% female. But then at the other end of the spectrum, there is Hungary with 25%. Now, Malta lies between Hungary and, say, Estonia. So it's still at the lower end of the spectrum, I would say. But we're not all that bad. But we can improve, obviously. I mean, the idea that there should be this parity, if you want to call it parity, is because, well, we are half the population anyway. So, we have to make our voice heard, and even in any field, really. But, of course, we are talking about science here.
In the statistics that I was looking at, which I admit is 2016, if we're talking about tertiary graduates by field and gender, the natural sciences, mathematics and statistics and information and communication technology shows that it's certainly not the most popular graduate field. It's not the most popular field, certainly not. The most popular being social sciences, journalism, information, business administration and law. And perhaps later on we can talk about why. And that was graduates, and also in the distribution of tertiary education students in general, they are definitely not really a top of the range of choices. Perhaps Fiona would like to say something about that.
Yes, well, from primary school there is already the perception that maths, for example, is very difficult. So kids at that age might already be influenced from their parents. Oh no, maths is difficult. I never liked it at school. So it's already being kind of, they are already being influenced that sciences in general, maths included, might be a difficult choice to pursue. Then once at secondary school, again, they have to make a choice and they can choose some schools, they can choose biology, chemistry, physics. It's not even compulsory anymore for some schools. So at that stage, again, sciences versus all the rest. So it's like you have to say, okay, so is it too difficult for me to pursue or not? So they're already being... kind of, they may have to make the decision whether they're going to pursue something that is perceived in general as difficult, while the other options might not be so much. Then, once they keep on, if they choose to pursue a career in STEM, of course, they need to do their A-levels and then at university level. And yes, the subjects are indeed quite difficult. We're not going to say that the subjects, they're easy. You can just go for lectures, for example, at university. You go for an exam and you can pass without studying. But
I hope there aren't any courses like that, but science courses certainly not.
But of course, there needs to be quite a lot of effort, right, that the student needs to put into achieving good results and passing exams as well. But they need to see the larger picture. So if at a young age kids are already aiming to become an astronaut, a data scientist, a biochemical engineer, I think that we need to to guide them and to inform them, to get information about what these careers might entail, that it is possible for both males and females to even take up these careers, that science is for everyone, that science can lead to a fruitful career, to you can do a lot of good for the society as a whole as well. So I think that these things are all very, very important. And that being a scientist does not necessarily mean that you are a nerd.
Yes, as well. That's a good point.
Because there might be a tendency to look at scientists as if they are just
in a lab, white coat,
yeah, and nothing happening outside of their lab, right? So we all have families, personal lives, so that's very, very important also. Absolutely. To mention.
Well, now that we've brought up the question of communication, perhaps I can turn back to Danielle. And as she is actually officially a science communicator, perhaps you can tell us what will you do within the physics environment, because you're in the Department of Physics, but I'm sure that that extends beyond physics.
Perhaps I can tell you a little bit about my background as well and why I decided to pursue this field. It's a very novel field, let's start with that, because it's a very young field. So even here in Malta, it's still in its early stages, I would say. But my actual background is in education. So I got my first degree in education. I used to teach physics and science. And this is not so long ago, but 5 years ago, I had girls. I used to teach in a girls' school. And I had girls coming up to me, "Miss, why do you like physics? You're a girl." So this is not 30 years ago or 50 years ago. This is 5 years ago. And I would have these long discussions with my students, telling them, listen, if you don't like physics, that's fine, but it doesn't mean because you're a girl that you can't like physics. So I always had this thing inside of me telling me, okay, we really need to do something about this. I then continued my studies and I did a master's in science and society. And as you have pointed out, I'm doing my PhD as well. Back to what I do with the department. I do a whole lot of things, but I also do science communication outside of the department as well. So when I was doing my master's, I started organizing Malta Café Scientifique. And actually, Irene was the first event that I organized. And it was amazing that I'm there and I have this female professor in mathematics, no less, talking about a science subject. So here we have science themes and the talk is in a way that it's for everyone. It's not for the scientist or it's not for a specific audience, but it is for everyone to try to understand this research that's happening here at university, because there is a lot of research that's happening. Fast forward, so there's that. There's also, we have a Sounds of Science page on a local newspaper. And we have main articles again about research. We have television spots. So there have been television programs and there have been various slots where our academics, our research support staff, our administrative staff is helping in order to show light about this. What's this science all about? How is it relevant to your life? Then there are, of course, we have lab visits. We have students coming from various schools as well. And we always keep in mind this gender in science issue as well. Because as much as I think you have pointed this out already, as much as females tend to go for social sciences, perhaps, but then we have males not following social sciences. And again, there needs to be a gender parity in whatever field. Okay? Then, of course, we have other initiatives with the education department as well. We have iChoose, we have Teen Science Girls Cafe, which we just did as well, in order to promote, again, careers in STEM. I also started a radio show in the midst of everything. And I must say, I've been doing this for 4 or 5 years. I keep losing track. And again, it's to show that science is relevant to your life. It's not, oh God, it's difficult. But let's see what it can offer to us, how it can improve our life. So there's, it's a whole story.
Oh, a plethora
of
things
picture.
That one can do, absolutely.
Yeah.
Irene. The perception that mathematics is not so popular wasn't so in the 70s, because I remember there was Star Trek, no, going being shown, and young people loved it. And they realized that they're doing physics and mathematics. So I remember in England they had what they called the SMP system that was almost scholarship papers, and the students were enthusiastic about that. I don't know what happened since then.
Well, one point that Fiona made, which I would have liked to have picked up on, the fact that you said that there was a time when physics was compulsory, and an educationalist once mentioned to me a few years ago that it was a pity that it was removed as a compulsory subject, because many children who would have imagined that, oh my goodness, no, physics isn't for me, I'm going to cut it out at the first opportunity, actually couldn't, and then discovered that they could do physics. And especially, I mean, obviously teachers are very important. If you have a good teacher, it makes all the difference. But this person told me that really was a mistake, because it's true that there are people who perhaps are not going to be physics oriented and saw it as a block to their future. But in actual fact, it did a lot of good, and it did a lot of good because the girls had to do it as well as the boys. So I think that's perhaps could be also a contributory issue with this, with regard to the non-take-up of science subjects. Because in actual fact, I mean, also one has to look at the why people take up a course. And what about the job opportunities? Do they see it as a career that's going to actually give them a really good wage? Is it going to be make them successful? Because we've looked at the Faculty of Science and we've seen that the parity of gender isn't bad at all between, in fact, in the BSc honours, 17 to 18, there were 42 females and 36 males who actually graduated. But when you're talking overall numbers, comparisons are odious, of course, but FEMA, which is the biggest, if not one of the biggest, is 303 females graduating and 296 males, whereas it's 54 and 42 for the Faculty of Science in the same year. So the numbers are small. Now, we're looking at the reasons why. Fiona, what do you think?
So in our case, statistics, Department of Statistics Open Operations Research, in the first year, for example, we tend to get around 30 or 35 students per year. When you consider the amount of students who actually pass for A-level maths, it's still a good number. So the stumbling block seems to be A-level maths, because then, I mean, there are so many variety of courses that students can take nowadays. So with A-level maths, they can do engineering, they can go to FEMA, for example. There are different BSc courses as well that they can take up. They can also choose to go to MCAS, for example. So there are quite a lot of variety of courses. So getting 30 to 35 students is still considered to be relatively good for our course. And I suppose that we're managing to get that number because our course leads to very, very successful careers. So our students know that once they do our course, they have a job, right? There are so many jobs available for data scientists nowadays. Their salaries are really, really good. And we actually would like to encourage more students to take up that option because the country needs a lot more data scientists. So we're only managing the number of graduates is still very, very low compared to the amount of graduates that we actually need.
That's an interesting point, because again, when you're communicating, it's difficult to say do that course or that course, because in this course you're going to get a good salary, and in this course, okay, it's scientific, but you're not going to get such a good salary. You can't say that, really, can you, when you're communicating?
Well, We actually, when we have students, again, it really depends who you're talking to, right? I mean, this is number one rule. Who are you talking to? So if you are talking to, let's say, teenagers, at that point, yes, they are looking at having a good job with a good salary. But if you're talking to a primary school student, you're not going to tell them, you're going to get a really good salary. They're like, what's money?
Yeah.
You know, so it's all about framing. It's all about knowing who you're talking to. And, okay, career prospects, as I said, are really good when you're talking to a more mature audience. And we have various schools, as I as stated before, coming to our faculty, and we give them, we take them around the different departments. And again, each department has something different to offer. So you see, okay, I might fit well in this department, but perhaps this person might fit well within this department. And there, as Fiona has pointed out, there are so many opportunities nowadays that we always try to bring all these opportunities so that they are well informed.
Great. Irene?
As regards salary, in my days, I'm older than the other two participants, women who got married weren't allowed to keep on their employment, if it's with government or with university. So I was one of the very few women in the first year of the science course, and I remember a professor saying during lab in physics, saying, "I wonder why you're doing all this, you know, wasting your parents' money, because we used to pay. When you're going to end up in the kitchen." I still ended up in the kitchen, but I do many other things as well. And thank God at that time, I did not care. I just wanted to do what I enjoyed. I always enjoyed, since I was a girl, seeing connections between different areas and recognizing emerging patterns. So I said, my parents encouraged me, because that's important, and they were very proud of my interests. So I did not care that I knew I was going to stop working. So, in fact, I stopped for 6 years to bring up my children. But then legislation changed to my benefit, and I took the opportunity to work again and take care of my family at the same time. I don't think they ever missed anything because I worked. On the contrary, I think, you know, seeing me so engaged encouraged them in their careers now.
Absolutely. Fiona?
You were probably an inspiration back then as well, because being a woman in science.
Yes, I remember my students. When I started lecturing, I was 21 at university. So, and I remember the girls, you know, looking up and feeling we're as good as she is, you know, and we can make it. And they're now my colleagues.
Absolutely. And
if I want to
you
add,
give your role model.
Yes. Actually, I mean, I remember Irene, and you were an inspiration, still are, because it was a time when legislation was not in our favor. And this is what I would like to point out, that legislation should reflect and should help to deal with this gender parity. And we should work even harder so that every gender has the opportunity to do what they would like to do. Of course, here we're talking about science, but at the end of the day, isn't that what we always try to do? We always try to follow our dreams, as everyone here has pointed out.
I'm sure you're a role model as well, and you've had your own role models as well along the way, Fiona.
I like to say that I'm very humble about this, to be honest, and when someone approaches me and tells me that I'm a role model, I kind of still don't see how I fit into this role model thing, because maths was always something that I loved from when I was a kid. It was the first homework that I used to do. So really, what I do is like, it's a passion that I just kept on pursuing, and I found people who supported me along the way, of course, family, friends, so support was very, very important. Even now that I am head of department, I had colleagues that supported me to take up this role as well. I'm very happy that in our department we have gender balance, because half of the academic staff in our department are females. It's quite a rarity, even in the Faculty of Science, it's very, very rare. And especially a head of department female, I think I'm the only one in the Faculty of Science. So yes, I do hope that especially being in a managerial role might also inspire even our graduates, because possibly they tend to avoid taking up managerial roles because they need to take up, they need to take care of their families, for example. But it's all possible. Women can do it as much as men can.
I think that one of the diagrams that was given to me before the program was a picture of a pipe where you have the female bachelor graduates at 53%, we're talking European statistics here, and then the masters, they're more or less the same number, female PhD graduates, the pipe starts sort of leaking a bit, and female researchers, it starts leaking when you really, really need the plumber. So I think that this is not just in science, it's across the board. This is something that has come across in all the programs that I've done concerning every faculty or department that we've discussed, any aspect of women in, at university and outside in what they call the world of work. Of course, academia is work as well. But we need to find the plumber somehow or other so that we don't lose people, because researchers are extremely important, whether they're within academe and even out there in industry. You said we need statisticians and we need other scientists. We need those numbers to grow, so we need to find a way of doing that. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of our program. I would like to thank my three guests today, and that is Dr. Fiona Samud, Head of Department of Statistics and Operations Research, Professor Irene Shuri-Hakulina from the Department of Mathematics, and Ms. Danielle Martin Farrugia, who is a science communicator within the Department of Physics. It was very kind of you to be with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to 100 Years of Women on Campus. If you would like to hear the programs again, just go to www.maltauniversitybroadcasting.com and click on webcasts. Join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
You have just listened to 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri.